Okay, our guest for the morning is Steve Coogan, and Steve Coogan is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well.
Yeah?
Yeah, just glad to be here.
Yes.
Glad to be relevant. Still,
yes.
Just.
Yep. Very much so. Nice hair.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, well, yes, I did a display last year, Doctor Strange. In fact, I was on the dish thing. What's it called?
It's not called the dish thing. It's called Dish.
Dish.
That's my podcast, by the way. The Dish thing.
The Dish thing. Yeah, I did that.
No, the Alan Partridge thing.
Yeah. That's fine. That's what I call it. Because it always changes its name. But, I was on that with you.
Yes.
And all the comments below were like, what's going on with his hair? Because I had to dye it. I'd known, I would have preempted it. I had to dye my hair for this play I was doing called Doctor Strange. I had to have dark hair, but it was so dark and so dyed looking. It did look like I was having a belated midlife crisis.
It did, But it was for the role.
It was.
How serious.
I know people were worried that I thought it looked really good.
Yeah, people were like, because it made sense if you watched that podcast or listened to that podcast at the exact time of Doctor Strangelove going out. But if you just watched it yesterday, you'd be like, why is Steve Coogan's hair like that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
but today, listen, looks fantastic.
Thank you. I've gone for the silver fox thing.
I did actually
want to sort of put a little bit of dark in it, but not so much to get. This is like a little trick. George Clooney does it. I got the idea off him.
Uh-huh.
That you sort of do. You have a bit more pepper, but keep the salt. If you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
So you don't go totally.
No.
Yeah. You just sort of like
take the edge off.
Just take the edge off, so you're not like. So you don't look like a ghost.
And would you do it? And would you do it essentially sort of like highlights of darker hair, a low light?
A low light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah. Exact, rather than, or you just do like a
you
grey.
You would have made a really good hairdresser.
Thank you so much.
That's okay.
I think I would. Yeah. I'd like to. Yeah. Well, you take a lot of advice famously from George Clooney. So nice to have. Hair advice from George this morning. Yeah. You did just have a little trim, which I like, before you coming into the studio.
Yeah, well, when you know, it's like you either have short hair or long hair, and there's an in-between bit where it's terrible. And I was starting to get wispy bits at the edges.
I know,
but you're leaning into it.
You like it?
Well, with you can get away with it. It goes with your elan.
Right, thanks, yeah. The only other person I've seen have a treatment do on the 8th floor is now Steve Coogan's haircut and FK Twigs had her eyebrows bleached in the Live Lounge.
Right. Maybe you just reminded me, I need to darken my I pluck my grey eyebrow hairs, but I've reached the tipping point where there's so many grey eyebrows that if I pluck them, I'll have no eyebrows.
It's a careful line to cross. Be careful on that one. But yeah, last time I saw you was Dr. Strangelove, and that was, I loved that, by the way, so much.
I cycled to your podcast on my folding bicycle.
You did, you cycled, yeah. But we loved Dr. Strangelove, and it was like the first time you went back on stage in a long time, like 28 years? 25 years?
In a play,
years?
But I've done live stuff.
Yeah,
that doesn't really count.
Yeah, in a play. And did you enjoy that element? Because you were sort of halfway through it, I think, when we chatted.
I did 137 shows. Uh-huh. For me, that's a lot for me.
That's a lot.
And I felt like I was sort of chained to a very, very theatrical camp radiator.
Much like now.
Yeah. no, but I can see the end in sight here, so it's fine.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly. So no, I did. It really was. I mean, I loved doing it in some ways because the cast were great and I felt like part of an ensemble and all that kind of stuff. But I was count. I mean, I literally had, you know, like, when you see people in prison, they have a line and then sort of notches and then the lines for every 5 days. Yeah. I had that. I was counting the days. But I was glad I did it. But I was like, oh, I wonder if I can do four roles on stage. And the changes in the wings were like these Formula One pit stops where I had to, you know, people surrounding me, ripping my clothes off for all the wrong reasons and then shoving on new clothes the quickest change was like 10 seconds.
It's absolutely mad that you did many shows.
But yeah, you know, it's good to...
What do you mean? You did, when it ended?
I lost weight. I bought trousers that were like two sizes down, thinking this is going to be my new shape forever.
Yeah.
And they're all obviously at the back of the wardrobe now.
They're in the West End. Yeah, they're in the West End. So, and did it make you think, oh, that's it for another 28 years? Or did it make you think, oh, maybe I should do theatre more? Maybe I should put myself through this camp out?
I love theatre. The only trouble is you have to be there every night.
Yes.
Whereas when you sort of film something, you go, all right, I've done that. Can I go home now?
Yeah. Well, I said to producer Mark before we started this morning, I said, wow, there's a lot of days when you do daily radio, isn't there? He's like, there's a lot of days.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Every day. Hey, we always ask our guests to pick a heart racer, which can be sort of open to interpretation, like a song that you would get your heart going in whatever manner. It could be in a romantic sense, could be something motivational when, I don't know, exercising. It could be something full of nostalgia for you that takes you back.
Well, there's a song about the monkeys, me and Magdalene.
I love that song.
Do you?
Yeah. I went to my friend's wedding and I introduced that to one of my friends, and we were driving in Italy listening to that. Really? Yeah, and she messaged me not too long ago to say, what was that nice song that we had on?
Let's play that. Tell you what's interesting about it is Rob Brydon played to me on the trip in between takes. He said, guess who this is? I went, oh, it's amazing. Who is it? It's the Monkees. I was like, whoa, that really surprised me. And so I have these playlists, and depending on what projects I'm working on, and this, I'm writing this hippie drama set in 1969. And I've got Donovan. I've got Linda Ronstadt, Fairport Convention. All these would be hard for most people listening to this program's parents to remember.
We can go back on this show. I do know what? I love this song, and no offense to the Monkees, but you're right. I was like, oh, it doesn't sound like regular Monkees to me, or not the Monkees that I grew up knowing.
Unusual,
The choice of our guest, Steve Coogan, this morning on Six, that is The Monkees, me and Magdalena. Do you like to make playlists when you're writing, or make playlists for characters?
Yeah. I mean, the Alan ones, really, we didn't use any of them, but I don't know why, but I had this idea that for Alan, for example, we'd use really aggressive stuff, like Slipknot, and... I like the idea of stirring a cup of tea while Slipknot is the sort of soundtrack to it. Or just going for a walk with a rucksack on through the felt and the Lakeland fells, but Slipknot playing in the background. That's what they call a counter score.
A counter score. Someone please make that edit right now, so when Steve tells this, the social clip can be a clip of Alan walking to Slipknot, please. We should talk about the brand new series of Alan Partridge. How are you?
Yeah.
Now, I immediately got this reference of how are you as soon as I saw it. But Mish, my boyfriend, was like, I don't remember anyone on the telly asking me if I was okay. And I was like, I do. It's mad.
Yeah. How are you?
How are you?
It's just Alan Partridge's attempt to do an odyssey through the world of mental health, which is very in vogue at the moment. People talking openly about the mental health, which is a very good thing, rather than sort of keeping it all buttoned up. Alan sort of realised that there's a bandwagon he can jump on here. I think so. He's just hoping he has some sort of condition. And explores all the different ways of dealing with mental health issues. And even though it's sort of funny and silly and stupid in the way that you'd expect, I think weirdly, at the end of the series, you do actually learn something about mental health. Mm-hmm. Alan accidentally teaches you something about mental health, but it's a lot of fun. And it's sort of, he's obviously very clumsy when he says that we've always had mental health issues, but we had different words for it in the old days, OCD was just house proud.
House proud.
Yeah.
To a painful degree.
So he's trying to navigate his way through all that, and with hilarious consequences.
I guess he's now, we were thinking last night, he's so much more than a character, Alan Partridge. He's become this sort of like televisual cultural icon of Alan Partridge. And I love that he sort of manages to be a sort of mirror to society and what's going on. Do you think comedy, and in particular Alan Partridge, this character, can reveal more about society sometimes than drama?
I think yes. Well, I think as far as comedy, we live in times where we're supposed to be enlightened, if you like, and we sort of, and some of the bad habits of the past, you look at some TV and that from the 1970s, and you sort of it's quite sort of shocking. Some great comedy at that time, some of it quite bad. But I think you can use comedy to talk about things in a more truthful way, because, you know, there are things that we know, values we think we know we ought to have, and then there's that sometimes conflict, because sometimes you don't think the things you think you're supposed to think. So, and I think everyone has that conflict of, I ought to do this, but actually what I sort of think is this. And I think it's all right to acknowledge that conflict, but with Alan, you can talk about stuff that would ordinarily be you'd feel like you were in trouble. And sometimes it's like the emperor's clothes. Sometimes Alan can say stuff that we all secretly think but can't say. So, and sometimes he says stuff that's just sort of ignorant as well, that's just plain wrong, and then sometimes accidentally stumbles upon the truth unwittingly. And that's very useful, because you can, there's sort of an honesty there that means people, and also if people are laughing about something, it sort of stops it being people feeling anxiety about it. You can, you know, if you're laughing about something that you think is maybe all little personal hypocrisies that we have, it stops it being dangerous, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, we had Sophie Willen on, you know, who created Alma's Not Normal.
Oh, yes.
I love her.
Yeah, that's
and,
really great.
And she was saying that when she pitched Alma's Not Normal, the first time she pitched it, she pitched it to, I think, someone at the BBC in London, and they were like, what is this? And she said, a comedy. And they said, it's about your mum being a heroin addict. That's not funny. And she was like, it is up north. And then she pitched it to someone up north and was like, it's life. I like that comedy and drama and sadness can be all sort of intertwined, because she said, because that's life, you know, that is how your week might be, or your day might be, or definitely how your year might be. So do you like to intertwine those things with Alan? Because there's bits that, you know, I feel sorry for him. There's bits where I cringe for him, obviously, and then there's bits where I kind of love him.
Yeah, he's not mean spirited. He's just sort of mostly misguided.
Yeah,
I do like having this poignancy. You know, if you sort of make people laugh enough so many times in a row, then you just sort of cash a check of sadness.
Yeah, like,
something Alan would actually say, cashing a check of sadness. So you can do that. If you make people laugh, then at the end you can say something poignant. Yeah. People like it. It's sort of the reverse of when you're at a funeral. People make jokes, don't they? They sort of say something funny sometimes, just because everyone needs some release.
Yes.
And then, but then also, the reverse is true. When people are laughing a lot, they want to have a little sort of feel sad.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's like a break from the laughter.
Almost. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always think it's a good gig if there's like a fun song. I'm just going to tell you this sad song right now. Like, works with gigs and musicians. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have range, you know.
Oh, yeah.
As audiences, we have range. We have range. How are you? Alan Partridge. It's out right now. You can see it on BBC iPlayer. You can see it on BBC One whenever you like. Steve, thank you so much. Great to see you.
Always a pleasure. I mean, for you.
It really was a pleasure for me. Absolutely fine for Steve Coogan, but excellent for me. Steve, thank you.
Thank you.